All right, well, we are in our second week in the book of Ruth. So open your Bibles up and to the book of Ruth. It is just between, it's in the Old Testament, so the first half of your Bible there, and it's between the books of Judges and 1 Samuel. Kind of serves as a hinge between the two of them. So open your Bibles there. And if you remember, Ruth, we were introduced last week to Ruth and Naomi, and what we found was Naomi experiencing incredible loss. She went to a foreign land with her family to escape famine and ended up losing her husband and her two sons. And then she ends up returning to her hometown of Bethlehem with one of her daughters-in-law, Ruth. And so we pick up the story there. I want you to think for a moment about your favorite TV show. Wildcrats, Paw Patrol, Criminal Minds, whatever you got, right? We all have it. But imagine for a moment walking onto the set where it's filmed and you see all the actors that you're always watching and you're eager and it'd be amazing. But you'd probably feel a bit out of place. Like, where do I go? What do I do? I don't know what's going to happen. And I'm not an actor. I'm not a stage technician. I'm not a producer. I don't have a place here. I'm an outsider coming in. I don't even know if I should be here. I don't know how I ended up here. I'm here with all these people who seem important and like they have a place and I don't. But imagine the main actor coming up to you and suddenly saying hi and welcoming you and then telling the producer and director they need to find a part for you in the show, and you end up on the show. And then when it's time to eat, they got the break and they have all the, you know, the catering trucks set up and they welcome you and say, hey, come eat with us. You're like a part of the cast. Come on. And then when you go to leave, they give you all this swag from the show, you know, t-shirts and hats and keychains, and then they give you a nice big paycheck for your work that day. And then on top of this, they tell you to come back tomorrow. What would be your reaction to that? Imagine that with your favorite TV show, right? Imagine. How would you explain that? You'd be blown away. It completely, you knew you didn't belong, but you were welcomed. You didn't really deserve it, but you were freely given and welcomed in. You were shown completely unexpected favor. Grace, chesed, love. That's what you were shown. And this is what we see happening here in Ruth chapter 2. Last week we saw Ruth showing this chesed love to Naomi. This week it turns around and Ruth is the one who is receiving this chesed love. That's what we see this week. Now, what we find here in Ruth chapter 2, as you look at the opening verses there, we're introduced to a man by the name of Boaz. Okay, a man by the name of Boaz. And the way he's described and introduced here tells us that he's probably a significant player in this whole account. Okay, and we're going to see that. But at this point, we just find out a couple of things about him. Okay, important things. One, we find out he's related to Elimelech, Naomi's dead husband, right? They're family members of some sort. Secondly, and that's going to become more and more important in chapters 3 and 4, okay? But the second thing that's super important for this chapter is that we find out he's a worthy man. Did you see that in verse 1? Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. He's a worthy man. This is a form of this word is used in Proverbs 31 to describe the excellent wife there, okay? So it can describe at times a person's character, okay? The other thing, though, is that other times it can describe a person's influence and wealth. And it seems likely here that all of that's included. As we look at Boaz through the rest of this chapter in particular, and even beyond that, we see his character was excellent. Like he was exemplary in his character and integrity, his honesty and his love, right? But we also see he was influential. He clearly was wealthy and influential in the community. So he was both of those things. Now, we're not told right away why we're even introduced to Boaz. Instead, the author goes from introducing Boaz And then the scene shifts back again to Ruth. And what we find is Ruth telling Naomi and saying, listen, I'm going to go out and glean. Okay, I'm going to hope there's somebody who will show me favor and let me glean in their fields. Now, has anybody ever done any gleaning? Probably not. We don't glean too much, you know, around here, right? But let me give you a little background on what gleaning was. Gleaning was an activity that happened during harvest time. Okay, so what would happen is the reapers would go to a field. In this case, it was a barley field. The reapers would go to the barley field, and they would begin to harvest the grain. And they would take bunches of barley in their hand, and then they would use the knife in their other hand and cut off the stalks of grain, of barley. And then they would lay the stalks of barley down on the ground and go on and take another bunch of barley and cut it off and lay it on the ground. Then behind them, others would come along and wrap up the stalks of barley with some kind of rope or twine of some sort into kind of bundles, okay? So they'd have their bundles of barley, and then later they'd come back and collect all the bundles of barley and bring them into the storage area, okay? Does that make sense? So here's what gleaning was. Gleaning is the process of picking up the leftovers, okay? So when they cut it and then put it in bundles, there were little leftover pieces of barley and barley stalks on the ground. And gleaning was the process of coming along and picking up those leftovers. Or maybe they missed the corner of the field. In fact, they were supposed to leave the corners of the field. And so they would glean, the gleaners would come along and get that leftover little spot in the corner of the field. And this was specifically designed by God to provide a way for the poor to work and get the food they needed. Okay, listen to Leviticus 23, verse 22. It says, and when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap your field right up to its edge, nor shall you gather the gleanings after your harvest. You shall leave them for the poor and for the sojourner. I am the Lord your God. That's what's happening here. Ruth is poor, and she's a sojourner. She's an immigrant. She's not from Israel. And so Boaz was providing for the poor by allowing gleaners in his field. And that's what Ruth is going to do. So she goes out to the fields. She doesn't know whose field she's going to go to. She just knows she's going to try to find some place that she can glean and where they will let her glean. Okay? That's why she needs to find favor. So she ends up, as the text says, she happens to come upon the field of Boaz. Now that's a way of telling us God's at work behind the scenes. It wasn't just a happening. It was God in his providential design bringing her to the field of Boaz. After she's been gleaning for a while, says she got there in early morning, Boaz shows up. You know, he owns this field, and so he wants to check in. How are things going in my field? What kind of harvest am I getting this year? How's the work going? Any problems, right? And he sees Ruth out there gleaning, and he doesn't recognize her. You know, there's a smaller town. He knew pretty much everybody. And so he asks his foreman, he says, who is this? And so the foreman tells him, he says, this is Ruth, the Moabitess who came back with Naomi. And this is the point at which everything hinges. How is Boaz going to treat Ruth? That's the question here. Will Ruth find favor? Remember when she's told Naomi she's going out, she's going to try to find a place where she can find favor? Where will she find favor? Everything is in the balance here. What will he do with her? See, Ruth was incredibly vulnerable. She's an immigrant. She's a woman. She's poor. She has very limited connections. She's out in the middle of the fields alone. And remember, we're in the time of the judges where it was moral chaos. Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. If you've read or studied Judges, you know how sketchy it can get, right? What will happen? How will Boaz respond? Will she find favor, or will she be chased off, attacked, taken advantage of, abused, or worse? And as what we find out is that she experiences and is shown unexpected favor, grace, chesed, love from Boaz. We're going to look at four aspects to this here, okay? So number one, as we look at this chesed love that Boaz shows Ruth here, first we see Boaz welcomes. Boaz welcomes. Look at verses 8 and 9. This is that hinge part there where the foreman has said, has told Boaz this is who Ruth is, and then Boaz turns to Ruth. Verse 8 says, then Boaz said to Ruth, now listen, my daughter, do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that you are reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn. Now notice the first thing, he addresses her the way that he addresses her. He says, my daughter. Now, he could have just said, hey you, or hey woman, you know, but instead he says, my daughter. There is a kind of warmth and welcome in these words. And then in the following phrases, he ends up giving her complete access to his fields. Come, reap. And he essentially adopts her as one of his workers that could go there every single day and glean in his fields. He welcomes her. He gives her a completely open door. Look at verse 13. This is where Ruth kind of realizes that he almost adopts her as one of his servants. Verse 13, she says, I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants. So she says, I don't deserve to be treated like this, but you have welcomed me like one of your servants. Look at the end of verse 9 now, where he says, and when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn. Now, in this culture, normally it was the immigrants, the foreigners, who would go draw the water. Normally it was the women who would go draw the water. And here is Boaz inviting, welcoming Ruth to the extent that he invites her to come partake of this water that they had drawn for their workers. Do you see again? He's welcoming her. You can see how shocked Ruth was in verse 10. I think we should be shocked like this too, that Boaz would welcome this foreigner, this woman who wasn't a normal worker of his. But verse 10, look at what she does. It says, she fell on her face, bowing to the ground and said to him, why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I am a foreigner? You see what she does there? She realizes that this was unexpected. She knows how foreigners are treated. She knows the stereotypes, the common thinking on immigrants. Yet Boaz has shown her favor. He welcomed her. It gets even crazier down in verse 14. Look at verse 14 with me. At mealtime, Boaz said to her, come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine. So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed to her roasted grain, and she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. Now, meals were a big deal in this culture. You didn't just eat with anybody. To invite someone to eat with you was to identify them as an equal, as a friend, almost as family. We see that a little bit, don't we? Think about if you're at school, who are the people that you ask to sit by at lunch? Probably people you consider your friends. And if someone asks you to sit with them at lunch, it probably means a lot. Or if you have a family into your home to eat dinner with you, man, that probably means you're friends with them. You're extending a welcome to them. And again, here, what we find is so unexpected that Boaz would welcome Ruth, the foreigner, right? This is so unexpected. You can see how fearful Ruth is. She's so aware of her status as an outsider. She knows she could be rejected and chased off, but instead, Boaz welcomes her. Doesn't this remind you of Christ's love for us? The way that He has welcomed us and brought us near? Listen to Ephesians 2, verse 13. But now, in Christ Jesus, you who were once far off have been brought near by the blood of Christ. We're Ruth. And Christ, like Boaz, the greater Boaz, has brought us near through His blood. Boaz foreshadows and points to one who is even more worthy, who will bring those who are even more far off near. So number one, Boaz welcomes her. Number two, Boaz provides. Central to Boaz's actions here is his provision, the steps he takes to provide for her. You can see this in the opening words where he welcomes her to glean. Come glean in my field. Don't go to other fields, just glean here. It's a provision, right? A provision for her. And you see this, again, not only in the invitation to glean in the field, but also in the invitation to come eat with us, right? Come eat with me and my men, right? And then at the end, he gives her so much food, she has more left over. And at the end of the chapter, we see her taking the extra food home to Naomi so she can eat, right? Boaz is not stingy. He goes over the top in his generosity to provide for Ruth and for Naomi. And then we have this little conversation that Boaz has with his reapers in verse 15 and 16. So they've eaten their meal together, and he's just giving her all kinds of food. She's got to find a place to stow her leftovers. And then in verse 15 and 16, Ruth goes off to the field again to start working. And he has a little huddle with his reapers. He gathers them around and says, all right, guys, listen, here's the plan. Listen to what he says in verse 15 and 16. And when she arose, Boaz instructed his young men, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves. That was the bundles out there. And do not reproach her. And also pull out some from the bundles for her and leave it for her to glean. And do not rebuke her. You see this? What was he doing? This is like, this is like the grandparent who is playing a game with their grandchild and kind of lets them win, right? You grandparents have done that, right? Or maybe you're one of those grandparents that doesn't ever let the kid win, right? But that's what this is like, the teacher who gives you the hints for exactly what's going to be on the test ahead of time, right? He says, pull out stalks of grain from the bundles and just leave them on the ground so she can pick them up, right? What's he doing? He's generously providing for her, right? He's generously providing for her. Ruth worked hard here. In fact, we're told that she worked from early morning and then she stopped in the evening, okay? And then after she stopped, she had to beat out these barley stalks until she could get the grain and gather it up. So it was probably late. Like, she worked hard. But it's clear she had some help. She gets this, like, Guinness Book of World Records harvest of barley for a gleaner, right? This is like, bring out the official. Michael, where are you? Let's sign the certificate. We got the certificate for the world record gleaning haul, right? We're told she got an ephah of barley. This is probably... commentators estimate at least 30 pounds of barley, just the barley pearls, in a day for a gleaner. She was provided for. And you can see how shocked Naomi is in verse 19, just the beginning of the verse. And her mother-in-law said to her, where did you glean today? Where have you worked? Blessed is the man who took notice of you. Like, Naomi recognized, hey, this, you got some help here. This was somebody generously providing for you. Boaz showed favor, grace, generosity by providing for Ruth and Naomi out of his own resources at cost to himself. So number one, Boaz welcomes. Number two, Boaz provides. Number three, Boaz encourages. Now, this word encourages, we kind of use it a lot, but think about what it means. Means to kind of put courage into somebody else, to put courage into somebody, to give them hope, right? Confidence, comfort. And that's exactly what I think we see Boaz doing in verses 11 and 12. When he speaks to her, In verses 11 and 12, she has just asked him, well, why in the world would you show favor to me, right? And he turns around, and as he explains why he has showed favor to her, he inputs courage into her with his words. Look at verse 11. Boaz answered her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you have left your father and mother and your native land and come to a people that you did not know before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Imagine being Ruth. Maybe you've had second thoughts about what you've done. Maybe you've received abuse from others. Why did you come here? Go back to where you came from. We don't know what Ruth heard. But what she hears from Boaz is encouragement, is affirmation, is hope, right? Boaz wants Ruth to know that her actions have not gone unnoticed. He wants to assure her that she has done the right thing, the beautiful thing. Words like this are meaningful. They build up. They give hope. And then Boaz speaks these words that are kind of a prayer, a blessing for her, right? He is praying that God would provide for her, take care of her, reward her. In essence, he's praying that the God that Ruth has trusted would prove himself trustworthy. Did you notice that image at the end of verse 12? Under whose wings you have come to find refuge? Beautiful image. And it's important in the book of Ruth. We'll come back to it later. But what we find here is this expression that Ruth has come to hide herself in God for safety, provision. And Boaz is praying that God would prove himself trustworthy in that. But think about that image for a second. The God under whose wings you have come to find refuge. It's an image of a baby bird coming to its mother and finding safety and protection, security, right? Friends, this should make you want to turn to God. Just that image, right? Like right now in 2020, don't you need this? Don't you need to run to God and take refuge under His wings? Because all the other things we tried to find refuge in aren't working out so well, are they? We need to run to God to find refuge. We need to run to Christ to find refuge from our greatest problem, our sin. We need Him. Boaz here is reminding Ruth of that, encouraging her in that, giving her hope in that. Notice in verse 13 the effect of these words on Ruth. Then she said, "I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant." Boaz's words comforted her. She may have been still grieving. She may have been confused, uncertain, maybe abused by other people in the area, rejected. And Boaz's words of encouragement comforted her. He loved her with chesed love. He showed favor to her through his words. So, number one, Boaz welcomes. Number two, Boaz provides. Number three, Boaz encourages. Number four, Boaz protects. One of the things we see in this passage is that Ruth was incredibly vulnerable. She was an immigrant. She was poor. She was a woman. She was just vulnerable. She didn't have protection. It would be easy for her to be taken advantage of. It was like she was on the wrong side of town, in a sense, right? With no one to help her, without a car. One of those situations that you tell people, just don't get into this kind of situation. That's where Ruth was, right? There was two dangers that she was looking at here. Number one was the danger that she would just be driven off. Remember in the opening verses where she says, I'm going to go glean and I'm hoping I will find favor somewhere. So even though the law said to the owners of the land, hey, you got to let people glean, it didn't mean people followed that. There were no doubt owners, landowners that would drive off the gleaners and say, forget it, we're getting everything. There were probably reapers who would who would, you know, tell people to get lost when they came to glean because it affected their income. And so on the one hand, Ruth needs to kind of be protected from overly protective reapers and from being physically attacked and driven away, right? And you can see how Boaz gives her protection about that. He invites her to glean. Look at verse 9, chapter 2. Let your eyes be on the field they are reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? Okay, part of that at least probably means, hey, they're to let you glean and do your thing, right? Verse 15, we see the same idea where Boaz tells the young men, let her glean. Do not reproach her. Okay, so he's protecting her from that danger of being driven, chased off, right? The second danger, and this may be part of verse 9 here, but it's implicit in the rest of the chapter, is the danger of her just being abused, of being taken advantage of as a woman, vulnerable, out in the fields alone. Naomi seems to reference this in verse 22. Look at verse 22. Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that you go out with this young woman, with his young women, lest in another field you be assaulted. Boaz is protecting her, not just so she can glean, but also just protecting her so she isn't taken advantage of. Boaz is not going to let anything happen to Ruth as long as she is in his fields, which means that his invitation to, hey, come and glean in my fields, don't go to another field, come back tomorrow and the next day, it's not only an invitation to come glean, it's an invitation to protection. It's an offer of protective, chesed, loyal love for Ruth. You can see how comprehensive this was, right? It was not only a welcome that she just needed to be, to be refreshed by, it was also physical provision. And it was also words of encouragement. And then it was also physical protection and safety. You can see this. Now look with me at verse 20. This is part of Naomi's reaction. Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, may he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead. Do you remember how hopeless Naomi seemed in chapter 1? Bitter, in a sense, only aware of how God had brought hardship into their lives. Here she says, the Lord whose kindness has not forsaken the living and the dead. She's seeing hope. She's seeing that, yes, God still is kind. He hasn't forsaken us. And you know what that word kindness is? It's that word chesed. Loyal, covenant, faithful love. Boaz's actions are proof, they are evidence of God's kindness, that God's love has not failed. Now, think about this for a second. Boaz clearly knew about God's chesed love, didn't he? We can see that in this text so clearly. But he was not a cul-de-sac for that love. You know what a cul-de-sac is? It's where you drive into it and it's just a dead end. There's a little circle at the end and you can turn around and go back out. It doesn't go anywhere. He didn't just receive God's chesed love and kind of be a dead end for it. No, Boaz was a conduit for God's love, wasn't he? You know what a conduit is? It's usually a pipe through which water flows, and it goes somewhere, or maybe you take a wire or a cable through it, right? It's a conduit, it goes somewhere. That was Boaz. God's love didn't end with him. He became a conduit for the love of God, the kindness of God to flow towards Ruth and Naomi. Here it is, church. We have an opportunity every single day to be a conduit, instruments for God's chesed love to the people around us. Here's the question. Where is God calling you to show chesed love to those who can't pay it back? To those who are needy and vulnerable, to the outcast? Maybe it's the person on the street. Maybe it's the person living in your home. Maybe it's a fellow church member. Maybe it's your friend you haven't talked to in a while. Maybe it's the person you know is lonely or is older and doesn't have company. Maybe it's an immigrant in your neighborhood who recently moved from another country. Let's love by welcoming, providing, encouraging, protecting. Let's show the gospel. Let's love with practical physical help. Let's love with the good news of the gospel spoken in love. As we come to the Lord's Supper, we remember that we don't seek to love others like this. We don't seek to be conduits of God's love in order to earn something or just to be good people. We come, we're propelled forward to love others like this because it first came to us from God, because He first showed us love. Church, we are a company of outsiders. On our own, we're the outsiders, the far off. We don't deserve favor. And in our case, we're not only the outsiders, the foreigners, we are also the guilty. And yet, Christ has shown us favor. He has welcomed us. He has provided for us. He has spoken words of encouragement to us. He has protected us. Think about this for a moment. Through His death and resurrection, He has done all we need. He can welcome us because He became the outsider for us. He can provide for us because He became poor for us. He can speak encouragement and blessing to us because He received curses for us. He can protect us because He was wounded for us. He has done all that is needed for us. He has shown us this kind of love, this unexpected, undeserved love. And this is what we celebrate today.